Last fall, I was outside the sanctuary doors here at our home away from home. Most of our members were over there at coffee hour, but one of them was here, came up to me and drew me toward a family at the doorway. "Roger, these people want to convert to Christianity." "Oh," I thought, "with me?" They were a young man and woman, slight of build, with dark hair, and two little kids. Beside them was an older man who was translating for them. I couldn't identify what language they were speaking so briskly to one another. Hoping to slow things down a bit, I greeted everyone, including the children, with a handshake. This man, their translator, was also their landlord. They were all Persians and speaking in Farsi. I asked, "Are they Muslims?" He said, "Yes." "Are you a Muslim too?" "Yes, I am," he said, "but I'm trying to help them. This is what they want to do." So here they were, outside a building with a tower with a cross on top. "Well, our service ended an hour ago," I said, "and we're not really a Christian denomination." I didn't go on to explain that Unitarian Universalism has Christian roots, a Christian heritage, but by now it's theologically open and very mixed. I wouldn't know how to turn someone into a Christian. I was at a loss. I wondered how they might have experienced the Congregational Church's worship style, which takes place before ours. It's a very word-based service, all in English, and very few rituals without words. Didn't seem like an accessible fit. I thought of the Spanish language congregation meeting here in the afternoon. It has a praise band. Would they get into that? I thought of the Bible-thumping sermons I'd heard coming from the building across the way over there, in the strong voice of an African-American woman preacher. Soulful music too, but still a very wordy experience, all in English. I wondered if anything here would work. I asked, "What kind of Christians did they want to be?" "There's Roman Catholic, Evangelical, Pentecostal, and mainline Protestant." They didn't know. I said, "There must be a group of Persian Christians somewhere. Why not look it up on the internet?" He said they would, and we all shook hands to say goodbye. I wanted to bless them. The only blessing I could say that they would understand was a Muslim one. So I said, "Salam alaikum." And they left. Even with that Persian family's eager show of interest, Christianity is not the draw it used to be in this country. Recently, the media shouted the news from the Pew Research Center. The percentage of the U.S. population that identifies as Christian is declining. In just the last 7 years, the share of Christians has dropped from 78% of the population to 70%. In all regions of the country, participation is down, even among Catholics and evangelicals. Mainline Protestants are making a nosedive. The surprise of this news is in the steepness of the change, but not the direction. That's been going on for a while. In the past half century, religion has lost its leadership role in the social and civic life of this country. It's called secularization. It happened first in Great Britain and Western Europe. The churches there are still popular, but mainly for tourists, concert goers, and art lovers. In earlier centuries, religion was an umbrella institution encompassing all the other institutions of social, family, and civic life. No longer. Religion is now just one of many options in Europe and in North America. Right now, there's a seismic shift happening in the Christian world. Christianity is going south. It's not going away, but its center of gravity is shifting to the global south. Latin America, Africa, and Asia, including the Philippines. Christianity has always been a global faith, but our awareness has been dominated by Western expressions of it. Most historians have ignored its global reach. One who does explain it well is Philip Jenkins of Baylor University. In his analysis, the shift of the Christian center of gravity from northern hemisphere to southern is nothing less than a religious revolution. For example, Pentecostals represent the fastest growing version of Christianity. Their largest denomination, but not their only one, is the Assemblies of God. Since its founding in California a century ago, the Assemblies of God has reached 3 million members in the United States. But that's nothing compared to the Global South. In Latin America and the Caribbean, there are 28 million followers in the Assemblies of God. In Africa, 16 million. Many of them are converts from Roman Catholicism. The top reasons that people have reported for converting to Protestantism were based on personal experience and practical needs. Reasons like enjoyment of a spirited style of worship, finding a church that helps members better than their old one, and especially seeking a personal connection with God. Evangelical and Pentecostal Christianity now claim about one in every five people in Latin America. Still, massive Catholicism has declined from 84% to 69% of the Latin American population. According to Jenkins, one Christian out of every 11 in the world is a speaker of Portuguese. A century ago, most Christians of the world lived in Europe and North America. Now, 25% of them live in sub-Saharan Africa, and by 2050, Africans will make up 4 out of every 10 Christians on the planet. Generally speaking, the early spread of Christianity to the southern hemisphere took place through missionaries and through the global reach of European empires. Now, however, many lands that received missionaries long ago are sending out missionaries of their own. In far northeast India, tribal families in the state of Mizoram are 90% Christian, thanks to the work of Welsh missionaries in the 19th century. A state in India, 90% Christian due to Welsh missionaries. Wales is now highly secular. So a decade ago, churches in Mizoram began sending missionaries to Wales. By now, people in the southern hemisphere have shaped Christianity according to their own expressions of faith, their own cultures. It reflects their ways of living and not a culture from the northern hemisphere. As Jenkins points out, their cultures are mostly conservative, sometimes militantly so. If you grew up in a mainline denomination here in the U.S., you may have left it because it felt rigid or narrow, theologically or socially. Yet North American Protestants seem very liberal compared to their counterparts in other lands. What is called a Methodist or Presbyterian church in Africa may look like a fundamentalist one to a churchgoer in California. It can be painful for liberal denominations based in the United States to work with their faith families across the globe, where the faithful are non-white, mostly poor, and anything but liberal on social issues or theology. But now, I want to tell you about the hot new trend in religion here in the United States. As reported by the Pew Center, this trend is called nothing. Nothing in particular. No religious affiliation. The share of people with no affiliation represents 23% of the U.S. population. And it's grown. It includes atheists and agnostics, of course, but it also includes a wide variety of belief and practice. According to the Pew study, only 5% of them attend a weekly service. But 2/3 of them say they believe in God. More than half describe themselves as religious in their own way, or as spiritual but not religious, with no clear definition of what that phrase means. Many of the unaffiliated are younger adults. The Pew study shows that every new generation of U.S. Americans has a smaller rate of religious participation than the generation that came before it. No longer can we assume that because somebody's parents were Baptist, that they will be Baptist or their kids will be Baptist. Even if you were brought up Jewish or confirmed as a Catholic teenager, the chances are declining that you will stay involved in that faith as an adult. The Pew Center notes that many Americans use their 20s and 30s as times of exploration and creativity in their spiritual lives. Author Robert Putnam calls early adulthood a time of religious tinkering. While this image of tinkering implies curiosity and spiritual openness, it does not imply commitment to an institution. It does not guarantee longevity in any one place. Another factor these days is that it's less common for younger adults in the U.S. to settle down in one city with a family and a career at an early age, as Americans did several decades ago. Economic trends have not made it easy. Upheavals in labor markets have kept per capita income nearly flat for three decades. Average income for an American pretty much flat for three decades when you factor in inflation. Economic booms and bubbles that burst have brought instability. College student debt has ballooned. According to the Reverend Carol Howard Merritt, younger adults have more frequent periods of underemployment or unemployment. Jobs don't last as long as they used to. People change jobs and change industries frequently. For workers from age 25 to age 34, the median tenure in any job is 2.7 years. Such trends have affected not only involvement in religion, participation in service clubs, lodges, fraternal societies, and membership organizations of all kinds has fallen with each new generation. In Sacramento, I've been a guest at luncheon meetings of a local service club. This club has been around for a long time and has lost members, and now it cannot even use up the minimum number of meals that it must reserve at the restaurant that it meets at. Young members are few and far between. Some service clubs and other groups are experimenting to meet the needs of the new people they hope to reach. Yet many membership organizations continue in their same long-term habits. They show no curiosity about the changes going on around us or how they as a group might respond creatively. They live by the vampire's attitude of outreach and recruitment. Must have fresh blood. Thirty years ago, I moved to Springfield, Illinois for my first job in a new career. As a young adult, I began a spiritual search by visiting many churches, my own form of tinkering and exploration. One Sunday I paid a visit to a church of the mainline Protestant denomination in which I had grown up. It was an elegant limestone building like the one that my mother and I used to go to on Sunday mornings in my hometown. It had stained glass like the church of my childhood and dark wooden pews. I slipped into a pew during the prelude behind an older male-female couple. The lady turned around, smiled at me, and said, "Welcome." "I hope you stay," she said. "We need young people." I smiled back. I should have asked, "Why do you need them?" But I didn't stick around. Did they need young people because they wanted to keep their church operating in the same habits it had followed for decades? Or did they want young people so they could minister to them? Did they want to get to know them as people? This is the question for all membership-based organizations amid the seismic shifts of our times. As we move into the future, do we focus on our sense of scarcity? Or do we lead with hospitality and curiosity? Is our mission to serve or merely to survive? Unitarian Universalism has many characteristics of mainline, moderate, Protestant denominations. Given our similarities and given that mainline attendance has dropped in the past 7 years from 18% of the U.S. population to 14.7%, you may be asking, what does this mean for us? According to the Pew studies, those who identify as UU or another type of religious liberal make up about 1% of the U.S. population. We're about the size of the Jehovah's Witnesses. And you know, that's good when you consider, when was the last time a UU knocked on somebody's door unless they were meeting them for coffee? We are a small part of the religious landscape, yet so far we are holding our own. In the past 4 decades, the mainline denominations have lost more members than we've ever had. So my advice to you is drive safely and exercise. And eat well. And have more children. Indeed, we have had a high attendance in our nursery this year, as many as a dozen babies. What a blessing it is to have them here. What a blessing. What a gift. As Reverend Lucy says, our breeding and adoption program is working well. And because it's working well, we will refurbish the nursery back at our home base before we move back home. A professor with whom I've worked at the Graduate Theological Union in Berkeley has watched Unitarian Universalism and other denominations for years. He says that we are uniquely positioned to appeal to people who identify by that vague term of spiritual but not religious. Many of those who are unaffiliated are hungering for a home, longing to be known. Our embrace of both non-theistic and theistic expressions of meaning and hope is an appealing market niche. Yet we dare not take anything for granted. The days have passed when congregations could take it for granted that people automatically would keep filling the pews. No membership organization of any kind can take it for granted that folks will come through the doors and participate in ways that organizations used to expect them to participate. Yet people do keep coming. Not hordes of people, but real people. Real individual human beings come here. And some of them come back. And some of them join. Sunday after Sunday, our visitors include individuals of all ages and families of all types. They must have reasons for being here. You know, we all have so many options for spending our time. So we must honor the fact that people make a choice to spend time in this congregation. The choice to be present here is a sign of something important. It may be a big step. One person's presence may be a sign of spiritual curiosity. Another's presence may reflect a search for personal growth and meaning. It may be a gesture of hope for their life, for our world. Whatever else it is, a person's presence is a gift. We dare not take it for granted. You know what the most important reason is for the growth of an organization. It's not the bylaws and committee structure. It's not theology or doctrine or the lack of it. It's a personal invitation. It's a personal connection. It's the gift of presence. This is something we all can do. We all can do it. I've been thinking about the story of a minister I know. He's about 60 now. As a child, he was Catholic, but when he was 16, he learned about Unitarian Universalism. He looked in the Yellow Pages for a congregation in his town, and one Sunday he got on his bike and he rode to the UU church, and he went to the service. After attending the service, he visited the church's bookstore. He met a woman volunteering there. She got to know him. She didn't say, "Well, sorry, we don't have a youth program," or "Why don't you come back and go to the youth program?" or "Why don't you bring your friends here and give us a youth program?" She just got to know him. And she learned that he was curious and that he liked to read. She handed him a book about Unitarian Universalism, invited him to take it, and asked him to come back and tell her what he thought of it. He brought it back, and they discussed their opinions and his questions. She gave him another book. She said, "I look forward to talking with you again." And he brought it back, and this routine continued over the weeks, and a friendship developed, an intergenerational friendship. What a blessing. This young man became a UU. He grew into a minister. He became a leader in our movement and an author. He's a consultant for many congregations and a coach for ministers. What changed his life was not an advertising campaign. It was a simple one-to-one gesture of curiosity, of presence and patience. It was the gift of presence. This is true hospitality. This is what we are here for. This invitation. This connection. What a blessing. What a gift. So may it be. Blessed be. And amen.